I really need this to work, please.
It's time for the Liquorland Podcast with Joe Lewis.
Hey, folks, welcome to the Liquorland Podcast with JoJo Lewis. I am JoJo Lewis, and you are listening to the Liquorland Podcast. I said it backwards and forwards to make sure that you understand exactly what it is you're doing. Maybe you're listening to us on our website, the website. I make that mistake every week. Thelicorlamp.blogspot.com. You might be checking us out on the iTunes, because we are on iTunes. And I'm trying to get the podcast on Stitcher, which is apparently a super kick-ass podcasting website. I don't know how that's going. I submitted us, and hopefully we'll be on there soon. But, in the meantime, thank you for listening to the Liquorland Podcast. I'm really glad you guys came to it. Today on the show, I'm talking to comedian, funny man, dark humorist, Johnny Taylor, who a few weeks ago released his first album on Stand Up Records, Tangled Up in Plaid, and I suggest you all go check it out. I'm featured extremely prominently on the album, specifically in the right part, like the right headphone or the right side, because you hear me laughing. If you've never heard me laugh before, you're going to hear me laughing on this album to the point where even Johnny was like, I was debating on whether or not to give you a credit. And it was because I laughed really hard. He's a funny cat. And we had a pretty interesting talk. So today on the show, before we get into the talk with Johnny, is I've been dealing with kind of a lot of stress this week about something I didn't really think I needed to be stressed about, and that was I was talking with a fellow comedian and a funny lady, Jamie Fernandez, and we got into this talk about marriage and whether or not, you know, I wanted to get married. And I said I didn't. And I admit, I'm a smart person. I'm able to intellectualize a lot of things, a lot of ideas I have. I can just think them away. But it was a really odd talk because Jamie's belief is marriage is important. It's an important step in a relationship. This is what I can remember. It was on Tuesday. And I said, I don't really want to get married. I find the ritual, you know, kind of vapid, kind of empty, kind of meaningless. I'm of the belief that you can, if it's only for the legal benefit, that doesn't really make sense to me. I would really only want to get married to, as Doug Stanhope puts it, game the system. To, you know, that's a bit in his final album, or in his most recent album, Beer Hall Putsch, which you guys should also listen to. Her logic was, if you want to get married for that, why wouldn't you just get married now? And I explained that I'm a cross that bridge when I come to it kind of a person. And she basically, you know, posited, like, look, if you get down on one knee and you give a girl a ring, it doesn't matter how much of a feminist she is or how against she is the idea of marriage, that's kind of shocking, and she will want to respond to get married. And I'm like, okay, that seems reasonable. I understand that. And then I said, I don't want to get married because I don't want to grow to hate the person I'm with. And then she basically said, well, no, there is a sense of permanence. And I was like, no, I really do think that, guys, I've been with my girlfriend's name is Holly. I've been with Holly for 10 years. And I think a large part of that is because my girlfriend and I, we don't have many thoughts about getting married. We believe we're just going to be together, but we don't talk about the marriage aspect of it. And I was like, yeah, I think that if I was married, I would be trapped in, I would feel trapped in the relationship, because that's how your brain processes anger. That's what anger really is when you feel trapped. That's what anger is. It's called rage. It's a physiological response to the feeling of being trapped. And I know that at any time I can set it up such that I never have to see her again, ever. It's not a very difficult thing for me to achieve because I don't, you know, we don't share a lease. She's on another side of the country right now, so I'm not really concerned. Well, I'm concerned, obviously, but I trust her unconditionally. I have 10 minutes about how much I care about her that are probably some of the grossest jokes I've ever written, but also some of the sweetest. Anyway, and we were talking, and it kind of got to this point where, like, well, why don't you just get married, and if you want to leave, there's divorce. Like, you could just get divorced. And that is sad to me. Divorce is is kind of like, well, if you're going to get divorced, then why? Like, divorce, like, I was trying to explain, like, I don't want to get married and then divorced. And the idea that I can get divorced is not a reason to be married. Like, it's not good if one of the reasons to be married, if one of the logical reasons to be married is that I can be divorced. Because I'm seriously of the opinion, like, if you want to get married, don't get me wrong here. I'm speaking for only me. If you want to get married, then you want to get married, and I'll support you, I'll go to your wedding, I'll make an ass of myself, I'll drink all your liquor, because that's the kind of friend that I am. I will support any decision that you make, I will not try to convince you out of it. If Holly wants to get married, because we haven't talked about it in depth, I've kind of said I don't want to get married, but I do want to stay with you for as long as I possibly can. If she wants to get married, like, if that's a necessary part of the relationship with her, I feel like I might have to say no, and then that's the end of us. Because it's not something that I really want to do unless it's, you know, life or death. But the idea that I would do the whole ceremony of marriage, there's something so vapid and odd about going to a wedding when you hear these people proclaim their love in front of their friends and family and commit and say, I'm going to stay with you forever through sickness and health. And then the whole time it's happening, I saw my friend's wedding a few months ago. I was watching it happen. And in my head, I'm just thinking about most marriages fail in like 2 years and the divorce rates are so high. And I can only wonder if they hadn't gotten married, would they have still been like, would a relationship have ended if marriage wasn't a component? Like, would relationships have this kind of a detonation time limit if marriage wasn't there? Like, what if you didn't have that hanging over your head? Would you stay with somebody longer? And then people always tell me, they're like, well, Joe, no, you can just get divorced. And you get divorced and then you get out of the relationship. And I'm like, well, okay, that's fine. But then why do it in the first place? Like, if part of the reason why it's attractive to you is that it's temporary, then it's an empty gesture. Either it's permanent or it isn't. And if it isn't, then why bother? That doesn't make any sense to me. Like, I can get a joint checking account, fill out a living will. I can give my girlfriend power of attorney. I don't have to be married to get any of those benefits, except for maybe tax breaks. And let's be clear, I'll start my own business for that, and I probably won't make any income with any of my shitty endeavors. The point I'm trying to make is, I don't think marriage is for me. I think commitment is for me. I love being committed, and I love not being married and being committed. I imagine I've never been married, so maybe I'm speaking from a lack of experience, but as someone who's been in one relationship for 10 years, never cheated, never done anything uncouth, I can safely say that there is something pleasant about knowing that every moment of my life since we met, I consciously decide to be with her all of those times. I never feel an obligation. I make that decision every single day. I decide to be with her because there is no reason really for me to continue. Because if we were married, then I'd be obligated to stay with her regardless of anything else. And I honestly think that if part of the reason you want to get married is because you know you can be divorced, then you're not getting married for a very good reason. Because that negates what culturally marriage is supposed to be. And then I remember, and that's pretty much the sum. Like, I didn't get to say that on Tuesday because I was too busy, like, thinking about my beliefs at a core level. And then Jamie said something that I'm going to repeat here because I thought it was silly. She was like, you know, Joe, most great men got married and divorced several times. And I'm like, yeah, okay, that's probably true. But there were also a lot of great men who were rapists and mass murderers. So, I mean, most great men were shitty as well. Like, let's just take a look at evidence of, like, I don't think their being divorced is a catalyst for greatness. As in that, if it wasn't for that, they probably couldn't have cured polio or whatever. Like, that doesn't, it just seems strange. Anyway, so that was a lot. That's my soapbox. That's my marriage soapbox. And, we don't talk about any of that during the interview today with Johnny. This was an interesting interview to have because it happened really spur of the moment. Johnny Taylor is he's a super fan of the Liquor Lamp. He talks about it all the time. He sees me and he's like, hey, JoJo, I need this to work. Am I right? And I'm like, yeah. And he listens to every episode. And we talked a lot about just really interesting, cool stuff. Talked a lot about comedy and about hope and about crazy moms, and it was a really interesting conversation. So please sit back, relax, and enjoy my talk with the very funny, very interesting Johnny Taylor. Have a listen. You want Destiny?
I want Destiny bad.
Everything I've heard about it has been, like, mixed. Like, some people are like, oh no, this shit is awesome. And then other people are like, this is okay.
It's like, somebody explained it. They were like, it's like Halo and Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah.
Except in space.
I heard someone say it was like Halo without any innovation.
Oh.
Or it was like Borderlands without any humor.
Oh, that's neither one of those is very good.
Yeah, it's not a good.
I guess I'm getting Madden again for the 30th year in a row.
I'm holding out until November. I'm just gonna get Grand Theft Auto 5 again.
Again.
I just like the video. Good. I want to just drive around in a car where I can look in and like I can see how fast I'm going. Yeah.
It's like Stephen Fury's obsession with open world.
Open world. Games. Yeah.
That's the only thing like. It's sports or open world, or he doesn't fuck with it at all.
Open world is fun. It's like you just like a sandbox. Just run around and blow shit up.
It's pretty cool.
Watch people run. So how you doing, man?
I'm doing good, man.
Your album has released.
It's happened.
And that's exciting.
Very exciting.
Yeah.
I'm stressful leading up to it because I'm like putting this piece of art I created for whoever wants to judge it to judge it.
Yeah.
So it's intimidating. It stresses me out.
The initial judgments are good?
Yeah, it's getting reviews, and all of them have been really great. And it was selling well, debuted at 7 on iTunes, which was higher than expected, and hung around for a day or two. I think as far as stand-up comedy albums from people that don't have any TV credits, I'd say it's going pretty good, you know?
It's pretty good, man. It's pretty good. So, okay, I've listened. I haven't gotten my copy yet.
Yeah, I owe you one.
Yeah, I know. You owe me one.
Well, you're prominently featured on the record.
I am prominently featured.
It's like, yeah.
It's like I just released
it. Yeah, yeah. JoJo's going to put it, laughing guy.
Yeah, you can totally, like, and I'm only on the right side.
Which oh, are you? Me.
Yeah, I listened to like a couple of the tracks, and I was like, "I'm only on the right."
You're the right side.
I'm the right side guy.
Oh, that's funny.
Very specific.
Yeah, I didn't. Yeah, I don't know if I. Maybe I'm not listening on good headphones, but probably not.
Is it like so? What was the process of like getting it like together? Because I remember you recorded it last I want to say last October, and it's over. It's
September.
Over.
It's been over a year. Yeah, it was almost a year to the day. It was like I recorded September 18th and 19th of 2013, and released September 23rd, 2014. So.
Is that a typical like block of time for an album to be mixed and set up?
I don't think typical is the word. What happened was I recorded it with no label. I was going to shop around for local Sacramento independent labels. I knew Dan Schlissel from Stand Up Records, had a relationship with Keith Lowell Jensen.
Right.
Keith is a is now my label mate on stand-up, but he was on, he recorded Elf Orgy, which came out in 2013. He recorded that for them. And so I knew he had a relationship with Dan Schlissel. So on a lark, I just sent him the raw audio, which was about an hour and 20 minutes. One night, about an hour five the next, and said, hey, just listen to it. And if any, nothing else, tell me what you think.
You sent that to Keith?
I sent that to Dan.
Okay.
I'd already let Keith listen to it, and Keith was like, dude, this is good. Like, and so I was like, yeah, I thought it might be, but I just wanted to hear somebody else say it, you know? Because I'm always like, this is terrible. Like, that's my initial reaction to everything, is this isn't good. It's not good enough. But Keith liked it, so I was like, oh, well, you know, and he's like, dude, send it to Dan. It can't hurt. You know, the worst he could say is no. And so I sent him a copy, and I was like, hey, Dan, I'd love it if you listen to this and just give me some feedback.
So you sent him like an email digital copy?
Yeah,
or was it like
sent him an email. Yeah.
Just like a mixtape with a
with a poster. I recorded it on 8-track, and I was like, here, dude, one side of it's Queen's News of the World, and the other side is the raw data of my. So
it's like one earth, man, one earth.
Yeah, so what I did is I just emailed him, and then I was excited. I was like, yeah, man, he's going to listen to it, give me some feedback.
Yeah.
And then 2 months went by, I didn't hear from him at all. So I emailed him again. I was like, hey, man, did you listen to my record? And he's like, dude, I've been busy. Like, haven't got to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, okay. And I was like,
that's kind of like a brush off.
Well, it's like, it's been like 2 months. I'm like, and I want this thing to come out. So I was like, I might as well start shopping independent labels. But I knew that Keith was recording a second record for stand-up here at the Comedy Spot.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan was going to come out to produce it.
Oh, like he was going to personally come out?
He was going to come out and produce the album. So I was like, I was featuring for Keith that night. So I was like, hey, he'll see me and I'll get to talk to him.
Okay, that's smart.
Yeah. So he's there and I kill. I have a really good set. And then afterwards he's like, hey, I'm going to listen to your record. And I was like, cool. Like, kind of lit a fire a little bit.
Yeah.
And then he was like, 1 week went by, and he hit me up, and he was like, hey, I haven't listened to it, but I'm planning on listening to it this next week. And so I was cool. And then I went away. It was December by then, and I went on vacation with my girlfriend to her hometown in Pennsylvania. And the first night we were there, I get an email at like 4 in the morning that's like, hey, I got about 20 minutes left, but I'm in. I want to release
this
record.
Holy shit, really?
I want to release this record. And I was like, fuck, really? And then he's sent me a three record deal, an email, and
holy crap, man!
Had my lawyer, otherwise known as Daniel Humber, take a look at the cop.
You're like, Daniel, are you sober enough to read?
Yeah, exactly.
Can you look this over?
Took a look.
Kind of important.
Yeah. I remember he looked at it and he was like, yeah, it looks fine. He's like, there's one part that's funny in it though, and I'm like, what? And he's like, it says that he has your rights for the whole planet. I was like, what? And sure enough, it was in there.
I've heard that like record contracts have that weird shit, like all residuals forever in the universe and other universes.
Yeah, I was like, wow, on the planet. I could just think of like, I just thought of like an isolated area of Africa. I'm like, yeah, he still has my rights here too.
If someone downloads the album illegally in Darfur,
yeah, exactly.
He could technically go and fuck him up.
Yeah, he knows what's up. So I was obviously very stoked and signed the deal. And but there is, I mean, Stand Up Records has like all these great artists on it, and not only up and comers, but he has vinyl rights to so many, like, like he had Marin's vinyl rights, Ari Shaffir's vinyl rights, like.
Stand Up produces like most of like, oh, let's hear an album by this comic that's on TV and has a special. It's the Stand Up record that we get.
Yeah, it's weird that I'm even, like, some of my label mates, I'm like, that's weird. Like, that guy's a fucking badass, and I'm drinking a PBR in Midtown Sacramento right now, you know. It was funny, the day my record came out, it's a true story, I tweeted it, but the day my record came out, I was number 7, and I'm looking at my, I'm looking at myself, and I'm like, fuck, man, I'm right between Louis C.K. and Brian Regan.
Yeah, I saw that picture.
And I was like, that's crazy to me. I was like, you know, and I know it's only for a day or two, but I'm going to enjoy it for a day or two. And I'm real happy, and I walk down to 7-Eleven, and I get a Diet Coke and a Twix bar, and my fucking debit card declined. I'm like, yep, that's a stand-up comedy. That's how it works.
And you're just like, he's like, yeah, your car got declined. I know. I got an album in the top 10, too. How fucked up is that? Yeah, this is where my life is.
Yeah, I was like, oh, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
Stand-up comedy in a nutshell.
Yeah, it's pretty much, it's like really highs and then just humbling lows. Yeah,
sometimes within an hour of each other.
Yeah. That should be the opening for the next CD. Just like, my first CD released, this is what happened that day.
Yeah, yeah.
To put it in perspective.
I think that would be, I could turn that into a good bit. And Lord knows, I need to write some bits.
How often, like, what's your turnaround on material? Like, how often do you have an idea before you think it's, like, stage ready? Or that you try it out?
If I have an idea, I get most of my ideas for bits from something that happened to me, you know, or something I found interesting. But I'm almost always from a first-person perspective. And, I mean, people that are familiar with my act know that I'm definitely like a first-person kind of comic. You know, I talk about experiences that happened to me. It's very me-centric, my act is.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean... I'll have an idea, and I walk to work every day and walk home every day, so that's usually when I'm like, I'm going to work out a joke in my head while I'm walking. And
Freak out the passersby.
Yeah, exactly. And if I have the idea, I want to try it that night, you know? And yeah. I might go up with very little, you know, just have this idea. I might have a punchline. I might have a tagline that I don't really have a strong punchline for yet.
So you'll come up with kind of like the skeleton of, I want to go from here to here to here, and I don't know how.
Yeah, I do like an ABC. Yeah. I want the first – I mean, my personal writing philosophy is like, I want the first part to be informative and humorous. I want the middle part to start getting a rhythm to it, and I want the ending to just murder.
Okay.
You know, so I always want the setup to be interesting, though.
Okay.
You know, because the longer the setup is, and it's not interesting, the more pressure you're putting on that punchline to just murder.
Right,
you know?
Right.
I mean, I have a new bit I'm working on right now where it's, the punchline's great, and then I have a tagline that's also great, but the setup is so boring. I told her last night, I was like, I can't believe people are fucking still here.
Is it the Jonestown?
Yes.
Yeah,
it's
that bit.
It's the comedy festival.
Yeah.
And it's a real strong punchline, but getting there is, like, at this point, arduous.
Yeah, I remember the setup, and I remember hearing, I was like, it does seem long, it's interesting, but it's not...
It's not funny.
Yeah.
I mean, not funny enough. It's like, you know, but the punchline, and even people are sitting through that boring part of the story to get to the punchline that's very good. And I talked to Ray Molina, about it last night, and he's like, well, just shorten the joke. And then there's, you shorten it because the punchline's strong.
Yeah.
Just maybe cut out things that you might think are necessary, but maybe they're not. Maybe there's a way to get to A to B a little bit quicker.
Like, do you feel it's okay to just kind of omit parts of a story to kind of just get it to a presentable state?
Yeah, I've done that before with bits where I'm like, you know, this part is part of the story, but it's just not funny enough to keep in, you know?
So you'll just omit it just to be like, do you grapple with, like, if there's a level of maybe, like, personal deception of, like, I'm telling this story, I know how this is supposed to go, but I'm gonna lie to people.
But you embellish, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, you lie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. And, like, I have a bit that's not on the last album, but it'll be on this next one, that I'm using as my closer, is the choking bit, you know. And that is, I mean, the bottom line with that bit is that it's based in truth.
Yeah.
But I had to add some stuff to make it make more sense to a paying audience that doesn't know who the fuck I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So And yeah, I always do. I'm always like, eh, but you get over it. The laughs drown out the guilt, you know.
So it's like it's working in a way that my regular life didn't when it happened the first time.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
What difference does it make, really?
Yeah, and I mean, sometimes, I mean, I will do a story that's absolutely 100% true. You know, I mean, the colonic bit that I do is 100% true.
Yeah,
it's a true bit. You know?
Okay. So all your material is kind of like a first person level of material. It's like, your stories are always like really dark.
I guess.
Are you like a more depressed like dude? Like they always kind of end with like death or like evil. I think specifically of the bit evil, which is really funny, but now it's one of those kind of bits where, yeah, I do. I don't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Every time I go, I see a thing, I'm like, I remember that thing that I'm not helping.
Yeah. It's, I mean, I had a fucked up childhood, you know? I mean, my mom was in and out of mental hospitals my entire life.
Really?
Like literally every 6 or 7 months.
With?
From the time I was 5. She had severe bipolar disorder.
Oh, okay.
So she'd have these fits of mania. And they were always hyper-religious. She would claim that she was the Lamb. She told me that I was John the Baptist, and she made me baptize my brothers and sisters in a bathtub.
Okay.
Just incredible. And so...
What was the low? Was it like a fugue state, or was she just like fucking...
Well...
Just really depressed?
No, it was weird. It was... she'd be fine, you know. And then, you know, you'd wake up. I remember being 5 years old and waking up, and she'd just start, everything I said to her, she would say, so be it. I'd be like, oh, do we have any cereal? And then she'd be like, so be it. And I was like, what the fuck is mom talking about? She's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't know what it was, so my dad was like, I think she might be possessed by the devil.
That's the reason.
And I'm like 5, and like my whole family's like, oh my god, we have to have an exorcism. And then I'm like, I'm 5 years old, and I'm the only reasonable one. I'm like, dude, give her some Valium, you know, give her fucking a glass of wine.
Yeah.
So yeah, they thought she was possessed by the devil. They ended up taking her to the mental hospital. I think she had bipolar 2. I don't know whatever one of those makes you act. Like that,
yeah.
She had. I don't know which one it is.
Okay.
But, and then so, you know, I loved my mom dearly, and she was a great mom when she was my mom, but half the time she was somebody else. You
yeah.
know what I mean? She wasn't there. She was going through this shit. And then she died.
And then that's the end of that.
Yeah. And then my dad tried to be there for her.
Yeah.
And then they got divorced when I was in my early 20s.
Okay.
And then he died.
What was your dad like growing up? Was he like...
He's a like good a, dude, just a businessman.
Was he like a rock type presence? Like, oh, he's there, I can rely on him.
He's there. Kind of yeah, he was.
Yeah.
He was. I mean, he wasn't perfect, but he was definitely the stable role in my life, because I didn't know if my mom was ever going to be around to help me with my problems.
When you were growing up, did you kind of get a sense of like my mom is a little off? Like,
oh
yeah, you could tell.
Oh, dude,
Jesus.
Man. Well, I was 5.
Yeah.
I mean, it was pretty obvious, but I knew pretty early. I'm like, my mom is definitely not like other moms. You know, I mean, I'd go to my friend's house and they'd be, you know, baking cookies and bringing us Capri Suns. And
even today.
Yeah, even today. Capri Sun stays with me, man. My mommy issues flaring out.
It's like, hang on, I gotta pour some Capri Sun on this paint.
Yeah, I know. I gotta pour one out for mom.
Sweet it to Pacific Cooler.
Yeah, I gotta pour one out for my friend day. Dave's. But you know, I knew. Yeah, I was like, it's weird.
I wonder about that, because like when I was growing up, my mom and my dad divorced when I was about 5. Or 4, and I remember my mom would come by every once in a while, and then like a few years ago she went to my grandparents' house, and we showed up, and she was like drunk off her tits, like I've never seen my mom drunk before ever, and she was like the irresponsible like emotionally suicide bomb everyone she saw, and it like she kept saying basically like she was trying to She basically, her pretense was, I'm going to apologize to my kids for how shitty their lives are.
Oh, okay.
And she said some shit to my brother, and I don't know exactly what it was, but the way the night ended was she tried to, like, hug him, and he was like, I'm not feeling a hug right now.
I'm not feeling this, Mom.
So when she went in for a hug, he was like, don't do it. And she went in and he like shoved her and broke her ankle.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it was the best Thanksgiving I've ever had.
That's...
And what was weird was it kind of like that situation, there was one other thing that happened with her that kind of like made it so all my memories of my mom are fucked up now.
Oh, yeah, that sucks.
Because she was really drunk that night, and everyone was like, oh, no, she's just going through a tough time because, you know, her...
The divorce.
Well, I mean, this was like 3 years ago. They'd been divorced for over like 20 years.
Okay.
But like when it was like almost 2 years ago, she called me. She was like crying because she was still like... The rift from my brother and my mom is never going to fix itself be fixed.
Yeah.
This is fucked. But she called me, and she was, like, crying, and she was like, you know, Joey, he's never going to talk to me again. He hates me. I'm like, no, he's just – you got to give him time. He'll be fine. And then she hung up, and then I got a call from my aunt, who never calls me.
Okay.
And she was like, hey, Joe, I just want you to know they put your mom on suicide observation at the hospital.
Ooh.
And I'm like, why? I was like, oh, she was high on pills, and she was just calling people. And I'm like, well, fuck, man. When am I – like, I don't know, like, the only times I've seen her lately have been, like at, like, public places. Like, she doesn't know where I live.
Okay.
Just at public places, like a McDonald's, like if you're exchanging a kid or something.
Oh, wow.
Like a Craigslist meetup.
Yeah.
That's my relationship with my mom in the past.
You got this iPad.
2-3 years.
You got the $50.
It's fucked up.
Yeah, So, yeah, I mean, my childhood was weird. And I think, like, and I have bad anxiety.
Yeah.
Depression. I mean, you talk to comedians, you start realizing how many of us have depression and how many of us have anxiety.
We are of a type.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And I think that makes my material darker because that's basically the only way I got through it.
Was
trying to make fun of it.
Yeah.
I want to make fun of it before people make fun of me for it. You know what I mean?
Like you'll beat them to the punch?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm to this day, I'm beating people to the punch. And that's why, I mean, I think I mean, people call me mean. People say I'm an asshole. I know that's from my reputation.
Yeah, I've heard that.
I've heard that. People, anybody that really knows me knows I'm not.
Yeah.
But it's a defense mechanism.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm constantly trying to beat people to the punch.
Yeah.
And when you do that, you end up hurting some feelings. And truth be told, I never want to hurt anybody's feelings. That's the last thing I ever want to do.
Yeah, I think about that from time to time because I'm always the guy in a situation where I'm like, I'll say this thing that might be funny.
Mm-hmm.
Like just to take the risk that I can get some kind of positivity out of it.
Exactly.
And oftentimes it doesn't. Either it doesn't work, which is fine, or... Yeah. It has, like, an unintended, like, well, fuck you. Why did you
say that? Sometimes the worst thing is that oftentimes we're surrounded by people that have similar senses of humor. So you say a shitty thing to or about somebody, and then those people around will laugh.
Yeah.
But then when you go away, they'll go, man, that guy's an asshole. You know what I mean?
That's my fear.
And
that's one of my greatest fears.
That does happen. Well, dude, listen, I'm living proof.
Yeah.
Like, that does happen. But yeah, never my intent to hurt somebody.
Yeah.
I'm telling punchlines, and sometimes they're misdirected. And most of it has to do with the fact that I'm constantly insecure.
Yeah. You know? You never feel quite totally at ease.
Just no.
Do you ever? How does it feel when you're on stage?
Good.
Yeah. Like, does it feel?
That's where it feels good.
Do you still feel insecure, or does the insecurity?
No, not so much.
Really?
That's where. That's the only place I really feel. Like myself. You know what I mean? Like fully myself. I have anxiety. You know where I have anxiety? I have anxiety when I'm at home alone.
Just by yourself.
Yeah, I mean, if I have time to think too much, it's not good.
Yeah,
you know, I'll think my way into a hole. But if I'm on stage, I feel lucid. I feel like I'm part of something that's not as scary as being alone is.
Like you can feel like, oh, I don't have to feel nervous in front of these people or yeah, just exactly. about myself or
yeah.
the fucked up.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's like when I'm on stage, I feel like I'm in control, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That is about it.
And oftentimes when I'm not on stage, I feel like I could be spiraling out of control.
Oh, yeah. Because the stage is really the only place where you're like, no matter what happens, my words carry enough weight to control this yeah. entire room. Where exactly. in literally every other scenario, it doesn't work that
it's
way. Not,
and even if you bomb, it's like, last night I bombed at my own show, my weekly show. But I mean, I was doing new stuff and I was being kind of experimental.
Yeah, it's just.
But like, it was not good, you know? And it's like, oh man, I'd rather entertain people.
Uh-huh.
But even then I was like, you know what, man? I was in control the whole time. I just steered it into the fucking cliff. You know what I mean?
I steered
it into the mountain.
At any moment, you could have just told a joke that, you know, like, this will hit. Like, just I can just turn this on and it'll be okay.
Yeah, and I did. I reverted to that. Like, I was like, oh, I need to throw a silver bullet in my chamber. You know what I mean? Something I know that would work. And it did. But at the same time, it's like, you have those nights. But at least I know that, like, if I unravel on stage, I have before, where I will get unnecessarily mean, or I will get unnecessarily defeatist.
Really?
I'll shit on myself. You know, rare, but I've had meltdowns on stage uh-huh. before where it got weird and awkward and not comfortable.
Yeah.
But I almost always do it to myself, where I'm like,
yeah. Like you push
this isn't going how I want
this.
It to go, so I'm gonna bomb ferociously.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go down in a fucking blaze of glory.
That's it's all you can do to kind of make you. Well, here's the thing, man. Like I do that too, but I do it in this weird. I don't know. Before I go on stage, I have to work myself up into anger.
Oh, okay.
I want, like lately.
Yeah, you stalk around like a wild beast.
Yeah, and if you notice, like, my hands are twitchy.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's just me, like, I'm just seething. I'm just trying to build anger.
Yeah, ooh.
And then when I go on stage,
put
like,
some stank on
but
it.
It's like, it has to be, like, I know this sounds weird. The anger has to be just high enough where I hate myself, but not other people.
Good.
Because then
it's a good philosophy.
Because there's a few times I've gone up and I've been just too pissed off.
Yeah.
And then it shows.
What happens?
Basically, my tone changes.
Okay.
And it actually becomes more fierce.
Okay.
And I'll be more, way more defensive. Like, normally if a joke doesn't hit or if a part where I think is supposed to get a laugh doesn't hit, I'm normally like, oh, whatever. I can move on from there. But most of the time, when I'm that angry, I'll get shitty. I'll be like, fuck you. Why didn't you laugh at that part that...
Ooh.
I said that thing, it's dangerous. You shouldn't.
Yeah.
I shouldn't be that mad.
Yeah, I when I first started doing comedy, I was that guy that blamed the crowd always when I went wrong.
Yeah,
I was that guy, and that guy is not a good guy to be because it's almost never their fault. It's almost always your fault.
Yeah.
But it's like our egos getting like I'm like, no, that's funny. I thought of it. And then and that's worked before. I remember it's, that worked last night. But, dude, tonight's not last night.
That's true.
There's so many different things. The demographics in the crowd. Is it light? Is it full? You know, how fucking likable are you being?
Like, did you eat today?
Yeah,
there's
exactly.
There's so much shit that comes
am I too drunk?
Yeah.
That's the thing. I mean, that's the thing that comes up. I'm getting ready to go on stage, and I'm like, I've had, like, one too many. To do stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
And, like, sometimes that'll go great, you know, and then other times it's not as good. And if it goes great, you'll get caught up in this mindset of, like, I got fucked up and I killed. I'm going to get fucked up tomorrow and I'm going
to
kill
again.
This is
like I've reached some kind of, like, I need to honor this because clearly this is working for me.
You've reached your fucking drunk zen.
It's like that, what's that movie with Jackie Chan, like Drunken Master?
Drunken
like
Master.
Just drink just enough to loosen up, but not enough to like fuck up your life.
I mean, I'm not the teetotaler where I'm like, I don't drink four set. I'm not that guy.
Oh, fuck, really?
I'm this guy. I'm the guy that's like, yeah, I'll have one. And sometimes I don't. Sometimes I have four, you know? Sometimes I'm high, sometimes I'm not, you know? It's a potpourri of of shit when I go up there. You never know.
A lot of the time, like, I'll drink after a set, but I don't like the taste of alcohol in any event, but I hate when I drink before.
Oh, okay.
Because it changes,
it's probably better.
Yeah, I listen to myself on stage on nights where I know I drank right before, and I sound different in a way that I don't like. Just too kind of floaty. I don't know how to describe it. I can tell, though.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's definitely, you also have to learn it.
Yeah.
It's a skill you have to learn.
You need to practice.
How can I get drunk and go on stage, you know? I always worried about forgetting my act, or if I'm high, if I smoke pot, and if I'm forgetting my act. And never usually. I don't think of – oh, I have one time. I was in stand-up Scottsdale, and Daniel Humbarger and I hope he doesn't get mad that I'm including him in this story, but we ate edibles.
Oh, shit.
And on the plane, these edibles were strong, too. So
did they kick in quickly?
We ate them. We were about to go through customs. As John Hugation likes to say, the best way to smuggle marijuana through the airport is in your bloodstream. So we smuggled it in our bloodstream. We took it when we were at the airport.
Right.
Go through customs. We have to wait for our flight. But by the time we're getting on the plane, we're fucking high.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing okay. I was uncomfortably high. And it's not that long of a trip to Phoenix. But we got out. The show was at 8. And we got out at 7. And we had to go to Scottsdale.
Uh-huh.
And so I go up, and I'm really, really high. And I tell my opener. And then I forget every joke I ever read.
Holy shit, really?
Yeah, I pause, and I'm trying to find the bit in my head. I even, put my hand back there at a brick wall. I put my hand back on the brick wall and just, took a pause.
Like you're trying to channel the energy of all the comments.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, give it to me, Dan Cummins. Or whoever else plays stand-up Scottsdale. Ben Roy, give me the jokes. So I'm there, and I remember a bit that I hadn't done in, a year.
Uh-huh.
I tell it, and it does well, and then I was, back in. But, okay. Whew, boy, was it hard.
That's a stressful moment.
We're talking a lot about comedy.
Yeah, that's okay.
We went so inside baseball.
Do you want to move into something more heavy?
Oh, no, we could do whatever you want.
Oh,
you're the boss.
I brought up my mom's story. I thought that was good.
Yeah, it was great. Oh, we talked about comedy. We've covered a lot of bases.
Yeah, and it's only been half an hour.
That's crazy. Yeah.
I know. That's the way it's supposed to be. It's supposed to just be kind of like...
But, yeah,
it's... Whatever.
No, you do a good job on the show. I'm a fan. I'm a fan of the show.
I know.
And I listen to the Liquor Lamp religiously.
People tell me that... I was the other day, Jamie was like... she said, Johnny was talks about your podcast all the time. I was like, oh, really? And then she said this. She was like, oftentimes he says he listens to it just to hear if he's going to be mentioned in it.
Yeah, yeah.
Which made me laugh.
People
so
talk
hard.
Shit. You know what's weird is that I do get mentioned on the podcast. I knew Jamie would bring me up for some reason.
Uh-huh.
I just want to hear if people are like, that guy's an asshole.
Oh, like fuck that.
Because that's me.
Yeah.
That's the world I'm living in.
Do you feel like there are people who do you get nervous thinking people are talking about you?
No, I don't care that much.
Yeah,
it's more narcissism.
Yeah,
I'm like, I love hearing my name mentioned. No, it's not. It's not. I'm actually a big fan of how you do the podcast.
Oh, really?
It sounds great. You're a good interviewer.
Well, thank
it's,
you.
And it's interesting to hear my friends and what they're. I hear about people I'm close to in a way that I've never heard some of these stories, you know, and I didn't, I mean, you've had Emma on, and you've had Alfonso and Mike Patton. These are people that I consider myself pretty close with.
Yeah.
And you hear, a different side of them. You know, Emma, I loved Emma's episode.
Yeah, that's
I thought it showed her in such a, no one knows a lot about Emma.
No.
You know what I mean? And, you kind of get to know her on that episode.
Yeah,
you know?
it was one of the weirdest. That interview in particular surprised me that it even happened.
Yeah.
Because I don't see her very often.
Yeah.
And when I do see her, I don't I feel weird trying to even now, I still feel kind of weird trying to talk to her, even though I know, like, I talk to her all the time.
Yeah.
But it feels weird a little bit.
Cause yeah, she's like, she keeps it close to the vest.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So it's really cool to, like, hear her talk. And but I'm a fan of podcasts. I like podcasts, you know. When I'm at work, I listen to, you know, Marin, and I listen to yours, and I listen to Duncan Trussell's podcast, and I also love pro wrestling, so I'll listen to some pro wrestling podcasts.
The Steve Austin Hour.
Steve Austin's good. Dude, he's a gifted facilitator. Who knew? Also, there's one called Art of Wrestling, Colt Cabana's podcast. Very funny. I mean, you're going to listen to it. I'm a wrestling fan. I don't know who the fuck he's talking to. You know, it's probably like a comedy fan listening to like a local comedy podcast.
Yeah.
I call, who the fuck is Dorian Foster?
Who are these people?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, they sound kind of like they know what they're, but who are they?
It's interesting to get to listen to comics that are at this level, though, because like this is stand-up comedy, man. What people are doing, driving around in fancy cars and they're on sitcoms and shit. It changes, you know, but man, we're fucking grinding out here, you know?
Yeah, and it's painful. Well, here's the thing that surprised me, and I don't know how much of it is just people knowing the format or anything, but the way people talk about, or maybe just me, the way that I talk about comedy and the way that people talk about comedy that are on this, if you listen to a lot of episodes like of WTF where he talks specifically to comics...
Uh-huh.
They talk about it in the same way.
Yeah, right.
Like, and it's like it's strange to me. It's like they talk about anxiety. They talk about fear on stage, working out, all the stuff they talk about. We talk about it in exactly the same way.
It's weird, huh?
Yeah, it's just like they're farther along, which leads me to believe like it's never like this. It's this. It's
at
this,
some
just
point
with
it's
more,
always this
with bigger rooms.
Exactly. At some point it's always this.
Yeah,
you know? And that's the thing about like. These people, I mean, people like heroes of yours and mine, these are people that bombed at open mics, too.
You know
what I mean? And did shitty one-nighters in fucking Winnemucca and Eugene and Wind River Casino and Reading, you know? I mean...
And they were grateful for those gigs. They were excited for it. Dude. They bragged about it.
Dude, I've bombed... I've done Wind River Casino. Shout out to Jake Daniels. I've done Wind River Casino like 4 times.
Yeah.
I never do well there.
Wow.
But I'm always excited that I get to go on the road and make $100.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's what comedy at this level is. You know what I mean?
It's like you're getting excited about those opportunities that, because even as low
as
I'm
going to do it this time, man.
They're still great that you're getting it.
Dude, there was a night Matt Gubser, myself, and Daniel Humbarger went to Wind River Casino.
Yeah.
And bombed for 2 hours straight. There was literally 5 minutes where it went well.
And then the rest was just like these
It was
people.
Daniel eating shit, then I ate shit, then Matt ate shit.
Oh
it was
God.
Just a fucking nightmare gig. But we all had a laugh on the way home, and we all had money in our pockets. So, you know, I mean, that's not a bad night of stand-up.
No, it's
got to hang out with my friends and make some money.
It's the night of stand-up you were going to have the next night?
Yeah, exactly.
Ideally?
Yeah. I mean, here's the deal, man. I'll kill it. Luna's open mic for free. But I bombed at Wind River Casino for $100. I don't know which one's better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like maybe.
I'd still probably rather kill.
Yeah.
For free. Honestly.
Just because it feels better for your soul.
Yeah, you know, man. Like, it's going to inspire me to go make $100.
It just gave me money for basically pain. Like, I don't think I feel good
about
it.
Oh, yeah,
that.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, I felt like I got whipped. And then they were like, here's your $100. I'm like, thank you. And then left.
I always think about. This is something I've only recently started thinking about. I talked with, I think it was Janelle Murphy and Jared at Guzman. I thought about this, like, you're at a mic and it's fucking good. Like, you know the nights where it's like nothing good can come of this.
I'm just
going to go up here and it's going to suffer.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah, they talked about, like, you need, what would it be like if one of your heroes was here performing at this mic?
How'd they do?
How would they have done in this room? Because that's something that, like, I sort of kind of think about it already. Like, when I'm on stage, I know the people who are watching me, if they're watching at all, they're not comparing me to the guy who came before. They're comparing me to what their idea of a comedian is.
Exactly.
Who is, you know, like a Louis C.K. or a Bill Burr or a George Carlin, like high-level person. And so, like, I always think about myself on that level, which I don't know if that's... I feel that's okay, but I
think we all kind of do that.
I feel like at some level, like, you should do that because then it keeps your head like reaching higher for more. It keeps you hungry to get better because you're like, I need to be as good as that person.
I think so too.
Yeah.
I mean, I watch comedy a lot still.
Yeah. You know?
And some of the guys I like the best are always like, I'm like, have I ever killed that hard? You know what I mean? Have I ever, you know? And the truth is, like, you probably do. You know, in similar situations, you, like, the only difference is that if you're a good stand-up, the only difference between you and somebody that's on TV or has a special out is opportunity.
Yeah.
You know? Like, at some point, that guy got a good audition, and he passed that audition because he's a good comic.
It's at some point, like, there was someone in the crowd who was like, oh, I'll see that guy.
Exactly.
But it was always, like, he was just as good before for who knows how long until maybe someone was...
Well, it's like this with this record. People are like, how'd you get a record, though?
Yeah.
I'm like, well, I got an opportunity, and then I did well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Would I have a record deal if I didn't ever have an opportunity? Of course not.
You know?
I just would have been knocking on people's doors, being like, hey, I got this record. You know, it's because you're not going to have a chance.
Because when you think about it, it was like when you sent the record out in the first place, it was like if he had, like, when you think about it, like, if he hadn't come to do Keith's
been
thing,
fucked, dude.
Yeah, it wouldn't have known.
I would have released it on fucking Bill's Basement Records out of West Sac, you know.
And
had shitty cover art with a fucking 20 copies, you know. So,
and you'd still be like, it debuted at 487.
Exactly.
That's exactly
didn't
what I
debut
want.
At 200.
They told me it would debut at 600. I'm blowing their minds.
Yeah, blowing their minds right now, dude. So, you know, I mean, yeah, all that happened, and then I got a record deal. You know? I mean, Brendan Lynch was just on Adam Devine's house party, killed it. But, I mean, I was on the same audition for that same show, you know.
Yeah.
I saw Brendan kill it at the audition. I saw myself do okay. Brendan killed it.
Yeah.
He's the guy that got the fucking show. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just having opportunities and making the most of it when you have it. And that's how you get places. And then you're one of those guys on TV, or you're one of those guys making a record, and then someone like us is like, wow, that guy's so good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But here's the deal. He was the same comic as he was 2 weeks ago.
It's just that it's...
He just was on TV this
year. Yeah, he worked hard enough, long enough to be in a place where someone was like, oh, I'll take notice of that.
Yeah, he got lucky maybe a little bit, but made most of his breaks.
Yeah.
And then fuck killed it when he had the chance.
Yeah,
and then
look,
now he's on TV.
Yeah.
But, you know, a month ago, he was still the same comic.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
He was still that same guy who was, like, getting off of work and, like, I need to go, but I know it's not going to be you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, oh, I'm going to go to this open mic. There's going to be four people there. I'm going to bomb in front of my peers.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, he's, but now he's on TV.
Yeah.
He's a great comic both times.
But it was like that, just the work. I do feel like there is this huge sense of futility that comes with this endeavor. Or pretty much, I feel like maybe any art endeavor where it is so personal and it is so about, like, it's supposed to be about the art, but you do feel like, I want to make something of this.
Yeah, totally.
And it feels useless that I'm trying.
It does.
Yeah.
It feels like I'm fucked.
Yeah.
I don't have a chance.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a horrible feeling. I fucking hit up Keith Lowell Jensen. I hit him up today, and I said, man, life seems meaningless. That was literally the sentence I said.
Yeah.
And he's like, what's wrong? And I'm like, nothing's wrong.
It's just like I was paying attention.
It just occurred to me again that life seems meaningless.
We were yesterday, John Gamora and I, we drove down to Massey's in Walnut Creek.
Oh, yeah, Walnut Creek.
To do a show. And we were driving, and the place we were performing in was, I mean, it was cool, but it was, you know what On the Y is like?
Of course I do.
The way John Gamora described
bombed
it.
Bombed in that room 100 times.
I know, right? He described it like if On the Y had a play place for grown-ups because it was just pool tables and fucking a bocce ball, indoor bocce ball.
So court. It was basically like shit, but yeah, with something to distract you.
Yeah, and so We walked in and this smells like a place where I've bombed before.
Okay, yeah, it had that familiar I'm gonna eat dicks smell to it.
It's like old carpet, but it's hardwood floor. Yeah, like you don't know how that happens.
It smelled like On the Y.
Yeah,
That's what it smelled like.
And we're about to go up, and I went up first, and I did for what the room was. I feel like I crushed.
Oh, cool.
But really, it was like five people. I was able to get four people to pay attention,
dude,
as opposed to zero.
You did crush. That's a win.
And then this local comic went up, and she was having lots and lots of trouble. And then John is about to go up, and he's getting ready. And I lean over to him, and I'm like, it's going to be this forever. Like, it's going to be this for such a long time.
Fuck.
And then he kind of shook his head, and then he was like, yeah, it is. And then he went up, and he had a really good set.
Yeah.
And then Cheryl had to go up, and she was like, you guys can't leave. You have to stay here.
Okay.
And we all just kind of, like, ate it. And that was our road gig. And when we were driving back, like, that was really fun. That went well.
Yeah, dude. I remember thinking, like, and it is. I mean, to a degree, it is like this forever.
Yeah.
I mean, the day my record came out, I went and had a mediocre set at an open mic.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it was the night my record came out, and I was just like, well, there's 12 people here, and I'm going to go up here and bare my soul for these 12 people, and hopefully they'll like it.
Yeah.
It does feel like that. But eventually you start working, and, like, you work the clubs.
Mm-hmm.
And then those are so nice. I mean, the crowds are easier. There's people there. You get to meet a hero, maybe. You get to meet at least somebody that has a little bit of notoriety.
Yeah.
They might like your set, and that'll mean a lot to you, and then people will love you after your set and tell you how good you did. You might bomb.
Yeah.
That happens too.
Yeah.
But the room, like, at least you bombed and you got fucking chicken wings and a beer. You know what I mean? Made $50.
Yeah.
But it does feel like, man, it's going to be forever. I remember I'd go to the San Francisco Punchline Showcase week after week after week, and I would be like, I'm going to get up here, and I'm not going to do well enough, and then I'm going to just be waiting and waiting and waiting to get up again.
Yeah.
And it's like, how do you work at this fucking club, you know? But eventually, shit goes right a couple of nights, and you work at the club.
Yeah, you just, because you've worked long, you've built up the experience.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Kind of put yourself out there for long enough that they're like, let's take a shot at this guy.
That was the owner of the Comedy Spot, Brian Krall,
telling us to get the fuck out.
Get the fuck out of
after
his room.
He showed up late. We've gone for 45 minutes, so this is a good episode, man.
This is good. Thanks. It's fun. I do want to say real quick before we leave, if you ever hear that I said your act was awful, I'm not going to say I didn't mean it. But do know this, that my act's awful sometimes too, and I love all of you guys, and I never mean to hurt your feelings.
Thank you, Johnny. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks,
man.
For having me.
Appreciate
dude.
It, brother.
Hey, folks, that's been the show. Thank you for listening to it. I really appreciate it. You can check us out on theliquorlamp.blogspot.com, where we have all the episodes just backlogged. There's like almost 20 now. We're also on the iTunes. We're trying to get on the Stitcher. You can follow me at Bucky Gums on Twitter. Oh, and we all do have a Facebook page, facebook.com/theliquorlamppodcast. It's a page you can like, and also there's a group, The Liquor Lamp Podcast with JoJo Lewis. That's a group I'm in, so you can communicate with me more effectively. Leave in a page you like. I've been JoJo Lewis. Thank you so much for letting me talk to you. Have a good one. And I told you that this would, you know, it works.